Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. This is the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission regular meeting of April 7th. It's approximately 9:30 a.m. and we are in room 413 of the Capitol Building in Pierce, South Dakota. With us on the line, I hope, are Chairman Dusty Johnson.
Good morning, sir.
And Vice Chairman Steve Kolbeck.
I'm here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tim Seck, are you on the line?
I am. Thanks, Commissioner.
And Talbert Wieczorek.
I am, Commissioner. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Is there anyone else on the phone lines with us? If not, we will get started this morning. I just one agenda change, and that will be that the electric issue docket, ELO8-031, will be moved to the end of our agenda. It's a rather short agenda. However, that I anticipate that might take a little bit longer than the other items. So we will get started with administrative issues. Approval of the minutes of the commission meeting held on January 27th, 2009.
I would move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Hansen votes yes. Motion carries. Consumer reports. Deb Gregg.
Thank you, Commissioner Hansen. The commission has received a total of 134 contacts since the last report was prepared for the March 24th, 2009 commission meeting. 72 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 22 of the contacts involved electric service, 9 contacts involved natural gas service, 3 contacts involved gas and electric service, 7 contacts involved cell phone service, 7 contacts related to the do not call registry, and 4 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 729 of the 792 complaints received in 2009 have been resolved, and 2,512 of the 2,513 complaints received in 2008 have been resolved.
Thank you, Deb. Any questions? If not, then we will proceed to telecommunications docket TC08-122 in the matter of the petition of Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe Telephone Authority for arbitration pursuant to the Telecommunications Act of 1996 to resolve issues relating to an interconnection agreement with all telecommunications. A procedural schedule was approved at the January 27th, 2009 commission meeting. However, we are here today to review and consider the approval of the amended procedural schedule. And I believe Tal Wieczorek, who's on first?
I would. This is Karen Kramer from staff, and I would start with Talbot Wieczorek.
Mr. Wieczorek.
Thank you, Commissioner. There had been discussion on this with staff. We have been proposing stipulations back and forth with CRST Council. I sent them a stipulation proposal last Wednesday, and I have not received a confirmation that they agree with all the dates in that stipulation proposal. So I know when we talked to staff last week, staff talked about just continuing this if we didn't have stipulations as to all the dates. If CRST's counsel's there, I'd be and they've had a chance to look at it, perhaps they could address whether they have issues with the proposed stipulation.
Thank you. Sounds like a handoff, Ms. Rogers. Excuse me, forgive me just for a moment. Can everyone else on the phone hear all right?
This is Tala Wieczorek. I couldn't hear any comments from Ms. Rogers if she had made any.
Here we go.
Okay, great.
Helps to press the button, I guess. I apologize. Darla Rogers, appearing on behalf of CRST. And what I said is that I agree with what Mr. Wieczorek has stated to date. We've been basically exchanging amended procedural schedules. The one that you have before you now is the latest one that Altel presented to us. I have submitted this to my client and consultants for consideration, and unfortunately I have not heard back from them yet, so that's the reason I haven't responded to Talbot since he submitted this. I think that we are very, very close to agreement on the dates. I think there's maybe just one or two dates that we may have to change or adjust slightly. So what I'm going to ask the commission to do is to defer action on this or continue it until such time as I have heard back from my clients and can confer with Talbot, and then I think that we will be able to resolve any differences.
Thank you, Mr. Wazurik. Do you have anything to add to that?
Commissioner Hanson, I have no objections to proceeding that way. I think Darla and I can work it out.
Ms. Kramer?
Yes, staff would agree with a deferment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners? Any concerns?
Do we need a motion on that, or are we just going to take no action?
You can move to defer so that we have... I prefer to have at least some action showing that
sure.
how it was dispensed.
Okay, I'll move on TC08-122 that the commission defer action at this time.
Thank you. Any discussion? Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Hanson votes yes. Motion carries. Docket TC09-010 in the matter of the filing for approval of an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation and 321 Communications Incorporated. The question before the commission is, shall a commission approve the interconnection agreement? Kara.
Thank you. Kara Semler for staff. The agreement was properly filed and executed, does not appear to contain discriminatory language. No comments were filed. Staff recommends approval.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on this item? Commissioners, any questions? Action, any motion? I will move on TC09-010 that the commission approve the interconnection agreement. Any discussion? Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Hanson votes yes. Motion carries. That brings us to the first item on the agenda under electric, EL08-031, in the matter of the application by Buffalo Ridge 2, LLC, a subsidiary of Iberdrola Renewables Incorporated, for an energy conversion facility permit for the construction of the Buffalo Ridge 2 wind farm and associated collection substation and electric interconnection system. The question before the commission today is, shall the commission approve any settlement and stipulation agreements that have been filed? And we were waiting for some of those to be filed. I believe that they have been filed at this juncture. And Ms. Semler, you'll bring us up to date?
Yes. The only one executed has been filed. And I do understand this was filed at a very late date. It was filed yesterday. And if the commission prefers, certainly we could defer this. We have a hearing scheduled for next week, and we could certainly take it up at that time. Through staff's work with the applicant and several of the parties, we were able to draft what you have before you and what was filed yesterday. It is what these parties recommend as the commission's findings of facts, conclusions of law, and does contain stipulated terms. This was filed, it was created by these parties in attempt to keep next week's hearing as clean as possible, to give the commission a chance to review these findings as these parties recommend prior to the hearing. These parties all looked at this docket from a very global perspective, and these are the terms that were agreed upon. Several of the interveners have issues particular to them, and they have opted not to participate in the signing of this document. And such as the hearing next week. Next week on the 15th will be at the Swiftel Center in Brookings at 1 o'clock to take up those particular issues that those interveners might have. And at that time, the commission may certainly find from the evidence put on at that hearing that it needs to amend the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and may choose to add to the conditions prior to granting the permit. We began working on this project and finding party agreement a month or so ago, and I understand there are some issues, and I think Ms. Rogers will present those today. I heard from her right before the meeting, and she does have some issue with the process, and I know she'll share that with you today. At this point, staff respectfully requests that the commission take these suggestions and the signed document and approve those at this point, certainly subject to the changes and amendments that the commission may find appropriate after hearing the evidence at next week's hearing. Also, as I said, staff doesn't oppose to deferring this item and handling it all at one time next week if the commission so chooses.
What effect would a deferral have that consideration?
I don't think it will have much substantive effect at all. Staff put this on the agenda today simply in an attempt to keep the process clean so the commission knows what these parties have agreed to thus far. However, I think it may actually be messing things up more than keeping it clean at this point. So deferral may be the best option at this time.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Gertis, you're here to represent Iberdrola.
Commissioner Hansen, members of the commission, my name is Dave Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Pierin. This is actually Brett Kennecke's file, but Mr. Kennecke had to be out of town today, and so he handed it to me. Fortunately, Tim Seck is on the phone, and he is with Iberdrola and knows the subject matter well. And so if you have detailed questions, you should direct them to Mr. Seck. I will just tell you that Iberdrola is in favor of this stipulation and would ask you to approve it.
Thank you. Is there anyone else on the phone, Mr. Seck, who would like to testify on this item? Or are you just standing by for questions?
I think I'm just I'm prepared to answer any questions that the commission has.
All right, thank you. Then we will go to commission questions. Chairman Johnson, do you have questions?
I just
Ms. Rogers,
my audio faded a little bit.
Excuse me, Dusty. Ms. Chairman Johnson, excuse me. I neglected to ask Ms. Rogers if she had comment.
Oh, sure. Thank you. Yeah.
And being a good barrister, she does have comment.
Thank you. Commissioner Darla Rogers, I represent Sioux Valley Energy, HD Electric, and SDREA, who are interveners in this docket. I expressed some concern to Ms. Semler this morning about the process that we're following here. It's my understanding that while some of the parties have reached agreement on some of the terms and conditions, this still is a contested case, and there are other outstanding issues that apparently have not been agreed upon. And since that is the case, it appears to me that in a contested case, the actual findings of fact must be based exclusively on all of the evidence. We have not even had a hearing yet, and so it seems to me that while the document that staff has presented is entitled a stipulation, what it actually is findings of fact and conclusions of law, and they are not designated as proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. And so it appears to me that it would be premature for the commission to approve this stipulation at this point, because what this stipulation actually is findings of fact and conclusions of law. And I believe that it would be more appropriate to defer approval of this docket or document that has been submitted and filed until after the hearing, when all of the evidence has been presented, and then I believe the commission would be in a position to determine what the appropriate findings of fact and conclusions of law are based on all of the evidence. Now, you know, if the commission wishes to proceed today, I think that there are probably ways procedurally that maybe this could be changed. I think parties certainly can file proposed findings of fact prior to a hearing, but they would need to be designated proposed, and then I believe that under 1-26-25, that would mean that this commission would need to make a ruling in the final analysis on each of the proposed findings, and that may be simply we approve the ones that are submitted. But my suggestion is that to approve this stipulation as it has been filed would be premature, and that actually findings of fact and conclusions of law should not be entered and approved by the commission until after all of the evidence has been submitted. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Ms. Rogers, I appreciate those comments. I had down that approval will be conditioned on the outcome of the hearing for the non-settling parties. No force and effect if the commission imposes terms or conditions different from those agreed to in the stipulation. Is that, if that were a part of the motion, does that answer the questions that you had?
My concern is that the rights of all the parties are protected, and so for those of us that have not signed this particular stipulation, you know, where I'm having heartburn is that because these are not designated as proposed, I'm having a hard time fitting this process into the statutory guidelines. So I guess in response to your question, my concern is, A, does that follow the rules that I think exist for entering findings of fact and conclusions of law in a contested case? And I'm not necessarily convinced that it would. And the second concern is, like I said, a party can submit proposed findings and conclusions, but I don't think that the governing body would act on them finally until there are final findings of fact that are based on all the evidence. I think that would maybe be a more proper procedure, because you could have changes that would need to be made to your findings of fact and conclusions of law based on what happens at the hearing. And so if you've adopted findings, even provisionally, I guess I tend to think that that would make it harder, then you would probably have to go back and amend those, and that certainly may be doable. I just think that it might be a cleaner process, as Ms. Semler made mention of, not to adopt findings and conclusions until after the hearing, when you have all of the evidence in front of you upon which to base those findings.
All right. Thank you. I have down that you're representing SDREA, Sioux Valley, and HD Electric, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Thank you very much. I noticed we have quite a few other interveners, and I believe all interveners were approved, which means that Brookings County, Dual County, and Ralph Terrell Spence and Catherine D. Carter are also have party status. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Commissioner. And Brookings County agrees with the terms and conditions and the findings in this document. Dual County has their public meeting today. We fully expect them to adopt what we've discussed, and we fully expect them to publicly sign on to this document to submit to you so you understand their agreement, or for them to appear at the hearing next week to express the same. Mr. Spence and Ms. Carter will be at the hearing next week. They have some issues particular to them that have prevented them from wanting to sign on to this document as it is right now. You know, one of the reasons staff did work with parties to draft this document is because of all of those interveners, and to make it easy for them to participate and for them to make their concerns known and the agreement known, this document seemed the easiest way to do that.
Well, that's what I'm interested in hearing right now is the pluses. We've heard that there's some challenges with this. What are the benefits of having this at this juncture?
The benefit, I believe.
You didn't argue real strongly for passing this, so I'm interested in hearing why we should at this point.
And again, I can't make this as a real strong argument, but I think a benefit could be we have a starting point for next week's hearing. We know what the majority of the interveners, or those that have looked at this from a more global perspective without individual interests, do agree to. And we can then use this document and modify it as necessary. As of this time, I know Mr. Spence and Ms. Carter don't have any issue with the findings of fact. They don't have any issue with the findings of law. Their issues are very specific to them and may be something the commission includes in, as a, you know, as a condition to the permit. But it, their concerns won't alter the findings in this case. And I'm not sure if Ms. Rogers' client's concerns will alter the findings of facts either. As I understand it, those issues are very particular to them. So as I saw it, it would be easier at next week's hearing to have a starting point.
Thank you. Mr. Gertis or Mr. Seck, would you like to tell us why we should not pause in this and pass it later?
Commissioner Hansen, members of the commission, I really can't speak against what Ms. Semler has said. It seems to me that Ms. Rogers has, at the last moment, raised an issue that we didn't anticipate coming into the hearing. And so it seems to me that what Ms. Semler is suggesting is probably the best course of action.
Thank you. Ms. Rogers, are you compelled to speak?
I would just point out in response to the benefit, and that is that you would have a starting point, I would suggest that you would have that anyway. And that's why the statute allows parties to file proposed findings. My concern is that the commission not adopt or approve those proposed findings until after the hearing and all of the evidence has been submitted. And I think, you know, what the statute requires is that a proposed decision contain the findings of fact on each issue and conclusion of law necessary to the proposed decision. And so I believe that, like I said, the appropriate process here would be not to approve the stipulation that has been filed with you because it is, in fact, findings of fact and conclusions of law. And I believe that the findings under the statute need to be based on all the evidence. And so that's the reason I'm asking this commission to not adopt or approve these this stipulation at this time and wait until after the hearing. Then you have findings on each issue. And you would still have the starting point because this has been filed and is part of the record.
Thank you very much. Ms. Semler, the commission does not want to be dilatory, especially in important electric capacity opportunities for the state. And keeping that somewhat in mind, will, if we do not approve these stipulations, will this in any way create a longer time frame for us?
Honestly, Commissioner, this was an opportunity. An attempt by staff to keep this docket moving. It's been difficult to make a lot of progress, and I know Ms. Rogers has been real busy, but I heard from like a half hour before the meeting this morning. We've had a hard time getting things done on this docket. With that being said, the statute limits this decision to a six-month time period. We're within weeks of that 6 months, so May 1 is the deadline. Regardless, which is why the hearing next week will be very important. The commission will have to collect all the information it finds necessary to make its decision, and that decision will have to be out by May 1. So we've got a built-in time frame.
Thank you very much. Chairman Johnson, do you have any questions?
One for Ms. Rogers. Ms. Rogers, I mean, calling people to...
Could we have just a little bit more volume?
Yeah, sure. It'll have
great.
To come from my body as opposed to any technological fix, but if it's not good enough, let me know.
You're doing great.
Okay. Ms. Rogers, I mean, allowing people basically to, you know, settle out of a pending docket is not unusual in civil cases for sure. I mean, isn't there some value in, and I understand maybe they should be labeled proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, but for some interveners like Brookings County and Dual County, now that they have some confidence that their concerns and issues have been taken care of, isn't there some procedural value in allowing them to move out of this case rather than participate further?
Oh, absolutely. I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with what staff and those parties that have agreed are attempting to do in this case. If you look at the item on your agenda, it says, today shall the commission approve any settlement and stipulation agreements that have been filed. I understand parties enter into settlement and stipulations agreements all the time and settle certain issues. My concern is that that isn't what this document that has been filed is actually doing.
Ms. Rogers, I understand that. Can that be rectified simply by relabeling the sections and adding the word proposed?
I think that it could be, maybe my bottom line answer is no, I don't think that it could be rectified. I think that parties can submit proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law before a hearing, but I don't believe that the court or agency should actually approve findings of fact and conclusions of law until after all of the evidence has been presented. That's the way that I read the statutes governing contested cases, and I'm referring specifically to SDCL 1-26-23, 24, and 25. If parties want to submit proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, which they're free to do for the court's consideration, and that gives you the starting point that Ms. Semler talked about, the parties are free to do that. My concern is that the approval process, because then when you actually do approve your final findings of fact and conclusions of law, you have to make a ruling on every one of the proposed ones that have been submitted. And so I don't think your actual approval should be of proposed findings and conclusions. I think that they should be findings of fact and conclusions of law should only be approved by the body who's hearing the case after all of the evidence is in. Now, if you want to take out, I mean, if you want to change this document that has been filed and say this is just a stipulation and settlement agreement and here are the issues that these parties have agreed to and you don't need to have further proceedings on that, I think that that could be done. I don't think that that's what this document is, and that's my objection. Did I answer your question? I'm sorry.
Well, and then some. I mean, and I understand, you know, the arguments you've made. And I'm just looking for a short answer here, and I think the answer is no. My question was, are there relatively, you know, superficial changes that can be made to this document to resolve your concerns? And I believe that I've heard a no. Is that right?
I believe that's the answer.
Okay. Thanks very much, Commissioner.
Vice Chairman Kolbeck, do you have any questions?
I know. I agree with Ms. Rogers. I'm a little leery about the time, for one thing, and the hearing date coming up. So I don't have any questions.
It's interesting you said that. Any further discussion?
I might raise one other question, Mr. Commissioner. Decommissioning, this question would be for Ms. Semler. I mean, would there be some value in having some sort of a parental guarantee for the subsidiary on decommissioning? And I understand salvage value, but those numbers are constantly in flux given market conditions, and always will be. Was any consideration given to getting some sort of a guarantee?
This is Kara Semler. It's not something that we specifically discussed, but I can see value in such a thing, and we'll take that up after this meeting with the applicant, and if it can be agreed term, we could present that next week.
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks.
Also, Mr. Rounds has a comment for you too, Mr. Commissioner.
Yeah, also, the Brookings County Ordinance, which the project just got approval from, I think, a month ago or so, also covers that decommissioning a little bit more than our stipulation did. They have a little bit more strict requirements than we do.
Well, and I just, to the extent that each of these decisions becomes a little bit of a template for the next one, I don't mind, you know, if we believe a company has sufficient financial assets for us not to require some sort of financial instrument for decommissioning. But it seems to me that, you know, this subsidiary likely doesn't have much in the way of assets. And so I understand Brookings, you know, this situation may be taken care of at the local government governmental level. Doesn't mean that the next similarly situated wind farm would be. And so I kind of like to have, you know, if the commission were to approve this, I'd like the stipulations to deal with that situation.
Thank you. And the substance, probably one of the more substantive issues is the decommissioning. And I understand that applicants, am I correct, that applicants' decommissioning plan shows that the salvage costs are likely to cover all but a fairly small percentage of the total commissioning decommissioning costs?
That's true.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Smith, did you have something?
Not much, really. I think that decommissioning, I wanted to raise that issue just because that's an actual substantive issue. And if nothing else, that might provide, I think that provides a practical reason maybe to give the parties a week to talk that over. And again, I think, Mr. Gerdes, the only question there really is, again, where you have, I totally agree with the statement made in the decommissioning plan that Iberdrola itself is an enormous company and has a very healthy balance sheet and a high credit rating and all that. And Lord knows we can't necessarily presume that if it's a bonding company or whatever that we would be in a better spot, to wit AIG, which we've recently seen become, I'd sure trust Iberdrola's balance sheet over theirs. You know, I think that issue is out there at least to address. And again, I just didn't see anything in the plan. Commissioner Johnson raised it. Commissioner Hansen, about, you know, the commitment of somebody with some assets to, stand behind the LLC's, commitment. So I think that's maybe reason enough to push it over. I mean, the whole thing does kind of put us with the vote on this in a slightly awkward position. Personally, I believe the stipulation is agreement between parties, and when it's submitted to us, it is effectively proposed, despite whether that word is in front of those or not. You know, I think technically the commission could probably conditionally approve today. But I don't know that we gain anything, because one way or another we're going to hearing, you know, next week. So I don't know that we gain anything, and it would give you a chance to talk about the decommissioning. So I guess I'd kind of chime in on the going along with the deferral idea. I did want to raise one issue on that, if I might, though. And, you know, again, it appears as though at least, like Ms. Semler characterized it, the parties with a very generalized public interest obligation, namely staff and the local governmental agencies, have reached at their agreement, and they're satisfied with the vast majority of issues and the way they've resolved them. I mean, one thing maybe to think about is if we're going to go over to Brookings, I mean, whether or not we might be able to, over the next week, engage in some issue limiting, so we don't have to waste time on a mountain of generalized testimony that there's really no dispute over. I don't know, Ms. Rogers, does that make sense? You know, I mean, if you guys don't have problems, for example, with site restoration, access roads, you know, as far as we know, the two individual interveners, their issues are quite specific based on their latest filing, and they don't have any general objections to the project. They just have very specific things, and based on past involvement of your clients in these cases, your issues are usually pretty defined, you know, and I guess what I'm asking is that maybe over the night, prior to the hearing, if we could try to do what I think Ms. Semler was trying to do by filing this, and get this down to where when we go over there, we only need to hear that which is truly at issue. I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? And I'm not beating you up, I'm just asking, really.
And I appreciate that. And quite frankly, it was my hope that we would have, you know, the issues of my clients resolved as well, and we could be part of this whole movement. But unfortunately, that has not happened to date, and whether it will or not, I don't know. I have no objection, and certainly would agree with issue or limiting issues that need to be tried. You know, one of the ways that we have done that in other, you know, court cases is that the parties would agree to undisputed facts, or, you know, those facts that to which there is no dispute. And in that case, we would, you know, maybe enter for the fact finder a statement of undisputed facts. That's one way that we have addressed that in other cases, and I think in federal court that's the way we do it. That might be one suggestion or procedure that we could follow here.
Is that something where maybe we ought to ponder within the next day or two, trying to schedule a conference call or a conference and see if we can't reach some narrowing of the issues so that we can focus this as much as possible on the 15th?
That's certainly agreeable to me, but I do not represent all of the other interveners, so I certainly cannot speak for them, and I can't speak for the applicant either.
No, I understand. I just wanted your take on it, and I wouldn't mind hearing from Mr. Gerdes and Ms. Semler as to whether that would be useful.
Mr. Smith, I hate to interrupt, but I mean, if the hearing's only scheduled for a half day, I would presume that some discussion along the lines of what you've suggested has taken place. I mean, maybe we should pause and see with Ms. Semler if she had a roadmap for how this is going to unfold.
Well, and that's what the document filed today was intended to accomplish. I believe these are the facts that, as of today, none of the opposing interveners have had issue with. You know, the, like Mr. Smith said, site restoration and all that. I don't believe that Ms. Rogers' clients have issue with any of that. So that's what today was intended to do. These are the facts that I believe we can go into the hearing already having accepted. Now, I can just simply amend this document and resubmit it, and it can be entitled something entirely different. But I think this document could serve as that. And those issues that I know Mr. Spence and Ms. Carter have are very specific, and I can they don't oppose any of these facts.
Well, what about a conference within the next couple of days, and we talk it over and we... If nothing else, reach a resolution on that.
Yeah, I'm certainly available.
Pardon me, Chairman Johnson.
I mean, Ms. Semler, how did you envision this taking place? I mean, how will the applicant know which issues to address in their in any evidence they may offer up at the hearing? I mean, do they already understand the limited issues? I mean, Mr. Smith, I think it's a good suggestion. I don't know if maybe it hasn't already taken place over the course of the last couple of months.
I think the issues are limited to those interveners. I think the applicant very much does know those. However, certainly I would believe that the applicant's counsel will probably confirm that those are the issues that we are dealing with. But I think it would be easy for us to arrive at the issues for next week's hearing without necessarily trying to schedule a conference call. Although communication's always good, but I don't know if we, you know, if it's necessary.
Well, I just think Mr. Acting Chairman, the only concern I have is...
You're acting as the chairman, right?
I'm sorry. I can't help myself. I have to undo the severe damage that was done to me by being named John Smith, you know, so... No, the only concern I have is that we have something that formally recognizes prior to the hearing that parties have agreed to a limitation. Otherwise, don't we have to begin with the applicant putting on its full prima facie case and going over effects on wetlands and the whole 10 yards? I guess that's my concern, that we waste hours and hours on something that isn't at issue for anybody. That would be my concern.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. I would like to hear from either Mr. Seck or Mr. Gerdes if they have comments at this juncture.
This is Tim Seck, and my understanding from the
correspondence I've seen from Mrs. Rogers and her client is that their issues are beyond what's included in the stipulation agreement. It's related to station service. It's related to, you know, selling at retail, and it's related to kind of how the interconnection is metered and so on and so forth, which I don't think is addressed in the stipulation agreement. And, you know, I think that we're going to come to an agreement. It's just that what we received from Ms. Rogers, I just received a copy of it Monday, but I was out all last week. So there's a couple things that we need to have some more discussion between the parties, but my understanding is that she and her clients don't have any issue with the stipulation agreement, other than it doesn't include kind of the issues that they would like to have addressed.
Mr. Gerdes, thank you, Mr. Sack.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, I don't have the best understanding of this file because, of course, I haven't worked on it throughout the course of its development. But it seems to me that if there are issues that are outside the four corners of the stipulation, they can certainly be addressed at a hearing next week. And this stipulation that you see in front of you, by all accounts, deals with issues that are not related to any of the collateral issues that have been posited. So it seems to me that one of two things can be done. The Commission can either approve this stipulation now, subject to it being amended at the hearing next week, or the parties can agree that this can be taken up next week. But certainly it would put everything to rest if the Commission approved this stipulation, and if it needs to be amended next week, it can certainly be done. I mean, it's not a final act until the commissioners have said so, and so it could certainly be approved now. And if it needs to be modified next week, it can be modified. That'd be my view of it. But
I believe we've heard from all of the parties at this juncture. Anyone compelled for one last go-around? If not...
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Johnson. I wonder, I mean, is there value in the Commission saying, okay, these, we would want any of the interveners to indicate which of these findings or conclusions they have issue with, and those will be the issues upon which the applicant will make their case next week. I mean, if Mr. Smith is looking for something more formal to let the applicant know what to be addressing, is that one way to do it?
I'll let Mr. Smith answer that.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what I had in mind, is that we'd, if we got, I mean, just sometimes it's just amazing how in 15 minutes of just sitting down and talking about something, you can reach kind of a consensus on where the outstanding issues are at pretty darn quickly. And I suspect when we look at this particular document that just from past, I doubt if the RAA interveners are going to have a terrible lot of objection to what's in there, because these findings and conclusions don't address interconnection. They don't address station power. You know, it's at least possible, I would assume, that applicants might even have some objection to the relevancy of some of that in a siting case, but I'm not presuming the outcome of that. I could possibly see that. But I think that's exactly what I'm assuming, is that we go through all this. And I think where I see it, Mr. Chairman, is the REA, they have some issues that are not addressed in here. They're not mentioned at all. And the two individual interveners' issues primarily relate to a particular setback circumstance that is only pertinent to their particular situation, as I understand it. And I don't think they're requesting an amendment of the generalized setback terms or anything. It's a very particularized issue based on that last submission I saw. In fact, I heard them say in there that they were very supportive of the project itself. So that's kind of what I had in mind. Yeah, it was.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Commissioner Johnson, did you have anything further?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
No.
I would like to dispose of this then at this juncture and turn to commission action. I would like to, I'd like to have positive motions as opposed to saying the commission shall not approve or something of that nature. I'd like to phrase it in a positive fashion so that people understand what a yes and a no vote is. I am going to move that on EL08-031 that the commission approve the proposed settlement and stipulation agreement with the condition that approval will be dependent upon the outcome of the hearing for the non-settling parties, and that with the stipulation that there'd be no force in effect if the commission imposes terms or conditions different from those that are agreed to in the settlement and stipulation agreement. Is there any other verbiage that anyone sees needs to be in that motion? And then I would like to make remarks. I'm going to vote against my motion because although there have been some good arguments posed as to why it should pass on a basis that it does not apply, that the issues in the stipulation do not apply to those parties that are opposed to the passage of the stipulation. It just, the lateness of having the stipulations before us, the information, exceeds my comfort level at this point. And the settling parties, it's awkward because the settling parties have reached an agreement. However, we also have to recognize that the interests of those parties who have intervened are not identical to those parties. We've basically heard from the parties who've reached an agreement that the interveners should not be concerned with the stipulations that have been agreed to, but I'm not so certain that that's the case. I recognize that the parameters of the stipulations do somewhat set a foundation and a precedent for the decisions that we will be making, and also recognize that this is, regardless of whether we pass this or not, it is not a final disposition anyway. So I think that it behooves us to give the parties an opportunity to continue those discussions, knowing that the commission is under a state law mandate for the duration of which we can have a docket before us, and they, even though it can be extended with the party's request, it is beneficial to everyone if we reach that agreement, those agreements, as soon as we possibly can. Commissioners, do you have any discussion on the motion?
This is Commissioner Kolbeck. I have one. I can agree with Commissioner Hansen. I think that's the proper motion that should be moved. However, I don't know if I will support it. I would rather have the hearing and then have the stipulation after the finding of fact. I don't like the fact that all parties involved are not represented. I do understand that we can change it later by leaving that door open, but I just don't like the what it alludes to if we do approve a stipulation without all parties being present and accounted for.
Commissioner Johnson?
Well, I too will vote against the motion, but not necessarily for the reasons that have been stated. I mean, I do think decommissioning hasn't been addressed. All parties have had an opportunity to review this. I mean, this was properly noticed. If any party had a concern with a particular, the merits of a conclusion or a finding, they would have had an opportunity to raise that issue. The only issues were raised that were procedural, and even the people who raised those indicated that they felt that there were workarounds to that. But that being said, I certainly don't have any problem, you know, denying Commissioner Hansen's motion. We're all acting like this is next week. My one comment would be, I mean, who knows? This could be months and months. I mean, sometimes you let parties out of something because you don't know how much longer it's going to go on. It would be hard to imagine that, you know, next week after the hearing that all of a sudden at the end of that that we'll be able to rule. Generally, it takes us a little bit of time to get things in the proper order. But that being said, I certainly don't think turning this down is going to cause any hardship.
Thank you. Any further questions or discussion on the motion?
Well, I just have one question. I was under the impression that Mr. Spencer or Ms. Carter hadn't been a part of this.
We had a conference call last week, and we all spoke about the settlement. And prior to that, there had been a variety of written correspondence regarding the stipulation. And they don't have issue with the stipulation. They have issues unique to them that they will present to you next week.
Okay.
Thank you. And before we take the vote, I'd like to say that I do appreciate very much staff's efforts at trying to move this along and help all of the parties get together and reach some conclusions and some agreements so that this can, in order to facilitate this process. Appreciate that effort very, very much. I will call a vote. Mr. Colbeck, excuse me, Commissioner Colbeck.
Nay.
Commissioner Johnson?
Nay.
Hansen votes no. Motion fails. I believe that's the last item on our agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I do have another motion.
All right.
I would move that the commission request that parties review these proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law and be prepared sometime between now and the hearing to indicate which issues they disagree with. So that the applicant understand. I mean, to Mr. Smith's point, I do think we need to limit the issues. That is one way to do it. And then furthermore, that if parties have issues beyond the scope of the proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law that they would want the applicant to address as part of their prima facie case, that they specify in some detail those issues to the applicant in advance of next week's hearing.
That's a good motion. Let's put a little more particular to in advance so that we don't receive, like we did today, something minutes before the meeting. If that's all right, a friendly.
I think it's a great idea. I mean, we can certainly pause and see what the parties think, but, you know, by the end of this week, would that be enough? I mean, these issues, although we may not have reviewed them in depth, certainly all of the interveners have.
Exactly, and they've obviously discussed them prior to the meeting and understand them, and I think that could probably put unless they have some other work, and certainly they don't have anything else to do, but if they didn't, they could probably have it done yet today. Let's give them, what date is our, is that next meeting? 15th?
Wednesday.
And the Thursday before that would be the 8th, 9th, excuse me. Is that sufficient?
Yep. I would note that we're closed on Friday here, so on Friday is not a legal day here.
Right, it's a holiday. So Thursday the 9th, does that work for the parties? Obviously it works for the commission staff. Mr. Gers, can you speak for Mr. Kaneke? I don't know that there's a great deal that you guys have to work with on this.
That's fine.
Ms. Rogers? All right. Commissioner Johnson, is that part of your motion then?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
The 9th? All right, thank you. We'll vote on that motion if there isn't any further discussion. Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Hansen votes yes. The motion carries. I believe that dispenses with our agenda. We have a number of announcements that are printed on the bulletin. One of the items on the bulletin shows a hearing date, a hearing location, which is incorrect. Item number four, I bring your attention to that a hearing in docket EL08-031 will be held April 15th, 2009 at the Swiftel Center in Brookings. The hearing will begin at 1 p.m. I won't go through all of the other items at this juncture. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All those in favor of adjournment, please signify by saying yes, Mr. Commissioner Colbeck.
Yes.
Commissioner Johnson.
Yes.
Hansen votes yes. We are adjourned.